All right, bear with me. This is the first time I've done this. My name is Tara Ray. I'm standing in today for Jennifer Seth. So today I'm representing Jennifer Seth and the other members of my University of Texas at Austin Health Promotion Team. And we did this work in collaboration with the Texas Department of State Health Services HIV-STD program in Austin. And I have nothing to disclose today in terms of relationships with financial commercial entities. So I wanted to start with a little background today, and a lot of this I know you are, I'm sure you're all familiar with, that we are in a rapidly changing healthcare funding environment, and the ACA was a game changer for everybody, and I know the way that funding resources are being viewed has changed for a lot of us. HIV and STD services have long operated under a public health model with the understanding that treatment and prevention and the identifying cases and keeping people in care helps to reduce the community viral load. Public funding for discretionary health programs that target specific populations and diseases have been in place to ensure that the cost of treatment is not a barrier to access. And the effective prevention and treatment of HIV, STDs, TB, and viral hepatitis consists of more than clinical services. Various types of safety net providers provide traditionally non-reimbursable services that ensure that individuals seek and remain in care. And I wanted to point that out and just give you a little bit of an overview that today we're mostly going to be talking about a survey that we did in early 2011 that focused heavily on third-party billing. And at the time, back then, we did not know whether or not Texas would be expanding Medicaid. We thought it was still a possibility that that would happen, and it became clear that that was not going to happen. So things have changed a little bit since then, and third-party billing for a lot of these organizations ended up being a little bit less important than we thought it might be. One of the reasons for doing this study was that the health department and the health department didn't have a very good picture of the client composition in terms of insurance status, client income, and also the billing capacity of organizations providing these services around the state. To bill third-party payers. And when I say third-party payers, I mean Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance. And even saying that, there was a lot of confusion with the organizations. A lot of the organizations we were working with saw grant funding as billing. It's like, well, I bill Ryan White. So there was some education and some discussion about the terminology that we were using there as well. So with the 2013 survey, we ended up with 107 respondents from 104 different organizations, and we were asking specifically about those key services that we were interested in, which are HIV, STD, viral hepatitis, and TB services. So this initial 2013 survey, these were all organizations that were funded in some way by DSHS. So that's how we got our original contact list. The respondents were comprised of 46 community-based organizations, 35 local health departments, and we also had some community health centers, hospital-based clinics, and some family planning organizations. So even though we ended up having a pretty good response rate with this survey, I think it's still important to point out that we should use caution when making generalizations for many of these findings about specific providers or categories of providers. So the 2013 survey was part of a larger scope of work. The 2013 survey was an environmental scan that was done through an online survey of these entities funded by Department of State Health Services in Texas. And we did end up with 107 respondents. I think there were 136 total organizations, and out of that we had 107 respondents. And this survey focused heavily, like I said, on billing capacity, on their funding sources, and the client and financial and insurance profile. So from that initial work, we began to work on technical assistance development by looking at the data that we had received from this information. And we also did a number of follow-up interviews and had conversations with providers in an effort to make sure that our understanding was the same as theirs and to clean up some of the data. In 2014, we did another online survey, and it was pretty different than the initial survey. It was much more open-ended and didn't focus as heavily on billing. So we'll take a look first at the 2013 survey results. So we found that almost 75% or 74% of organizations collect income information from clients. We were particularly interested here in learning about the clients that were below 100% of the federal poverty level, and also those 100 to 400% because they would be eligible for subsidies on the marketplace, and then we were interested in those under 100% of the federal poverty level. Because they would fall in that Medicaid gap. Since Texas is not an expansion state, they would also not be eligible for Medicaid, and they would also not be eligible for subsidies for purchasing insurance on the marketplace. We also found that 77% of the organizations collect insurance information from clients, and 35% were uninsured, and about 27% of those clients were on Medicaid. Oh, and I wanted to point out that this is all self-reported, and this is an estimate from the providers of their clients' income level, for example, but they did estimate that more than half of their clients earned less than 100% of the federal poverty level. So this is a very low-income population, in short. Okay, so this chart that you're looking at now is a summary of a question that we asked about readiness to bill and plans to bill. So we asked them, does your organization currently bill third-party payers for any services related to HIV, STD, TB, hepatitis, reproductive health? And then we followed up with, if yes, how does your organization bill third-party payers for service reimbursement? So we learned that almost half of the respondents reported that they were currently billing third-party payers. An additional 12 respondents reported they plan to implement a billing system within the next 12 months. And among the organizations that were not billing, several commented that they had billing capacity as part of their larger organization, or that billing was restricted to specific programs or third-party payers such as Medicaid. Let me give you an example of that. So if this was a respondent from a local health department STD program, they might say, well, immunizations is billing, but we don't have the capacity to do that. So they were basically saying, like, there is some capacity to bill third parties in our larger organization. We just don't, our program doesn't have that ability to do that. Okay, so this list divides services into clinical and non-clinical services, and this division was of clinical and non-clinical services is as defined by DSHS at the time. So the organizations here are listed in order of the most offered to the least offered by the organizations that we surveyed. The services highlighted in red are potentially billable services that less than half of the organizations that offer them reported that they bill for them. So that sort of represents an opportunity where they could potentially be billing for these services, but they're not. And then all the starred services here are services that are typically reimbursable. Does that make sense? Okay. And then I also wanted to point out that there are a lot of these wraparound non-clinical services being offered. You know, and these services are commonly believed to improve health outcomes and to keep people in care, especially in a lot of the HIV community-based organizations. So the challenge here is really trying to figure out how they can continue to offer these services in a shifting healthcare funding environment. So with this slide, we're looking at the reported funding sources by organization type. So you can see there's community-based organizations, local health departments, community health centers, and hospital affiliated specialty clinics. So I wanted to point out that the a couple things here. So one of them is that on average, the government grants, including the Ryan White grant, comprise the largest proportion of funding for all the organization types, except family planning. But family planning was so small that we didn't include it on this chart. So local health departments received about 1/3 of their funding from local tax revenues. And the proportion of funds from Medicaid was notable only for hospital-affiliated specialty clinics. The rest of the organizational types were really not getting much income from Medicaid, and that makes sense. In Texas, Medicaid is pretty hard to get onto if you're a single childless adult. They have pretty strict criteria for getting onto Medicaid in Texas. So as a result of this initial work, we worked with the Texas Department of State Health Services to implement ongoing technical assistance. So this little chart here, which unfortunately has taken on the name of the crotch diagram, because everybody thought it looked like some legs. But anyway, so this model was intended, and now it has a belly button because of the size. Anyway, so this model is supposed to illustrate some of the potential pathways that some of these organizations can choose to follow. So at the top, there's assessment planning, decisions, cultural shifts, and then they split off into two legs. So over on this side is the billing reimbursement leg, and over on this side, unfortunately, it's called strategic positioning, but it's really a sort of a business restructuring, changing your business model. And these are not mutually exclusive pathways. So our technical assistants went down both the billing track and also the strategic restructuring track. Although, you know, some organizations have really participated in both, they could decide which one was more relevant to them. And then the strategic restructuring track has really focused heavily on the leadership of the HIV community-based organizations. And we've worked with a group, I think we have around 46 HIV community-based organizations in Texas, and of those, we've worked with a subset of those that are really interested in working in a peer network, and we've gotten them together several times for workshops in Austin and also for regular conference calls, and we are trying to give them the opportunity to highlight some of the successes, challenges, and do some peer learning about what's worked for them, what models seem to be feasible for their organizations. So the technical assistance has really been ongoing. It began fall of 2013 and is still going on now. So in 2014, we did a follow-up survey, and like I said before, it was actually pretty different than the initial survey that was so heavily focused on billing. And this was also an online survey. This item was in response to an open-ended question about what changes organizations have seen since January 13, and we were really just trying to gauge how much of an impact they were feeling from Affordable Care Act implementation. And so their open-ended responses, their responses were themed and grouped together, and the most common response was that the organization had expanded their services or reach. So some of the groups have decided, well, we're going to reach out, you know, we've never really targeted recently released populations, or we're going to, I know there's one group in Corpus Christi that had always been an HIV group, and now they're really looking, they changed their name, they're looking at themselves as a wellness organization, and they're broadening their services to include mental health and substance abuse services, and they're reaching a much broader population than they had before. Almost as many people, 22%, said they'd made no changes. An additional group said that they expanded third-party billing in some way, so they took some steps in that direction. Some became Medicaid providers, and some increased their engagement with private insurance, which is a pretty vague term. I guess I think it means that they try to contract with private insurance, some of them with limited success. So another question that we asked was about the anticipated impact of ACA, and about an equal number, about 25% expected to see impacts on services and reach, and about 25% expected to see impacts on funding. 21% expected impacts on clients, for example, clients who don't qualify for resources, that mainly referred to people who thought that their clients were going to be pushed into insurance plans in the marketplace that they wouldn't be able to afford. There were some concerns about impacts of privacy, and I think that was mostly in response to, again, to enrolling clients and people being concerned that the insurance might violate some of their privacy or... especially with something sensitive as HIV and STDs. Okay, an additional question was about how would you maintain your services if grant funding were reduced? So this was a pretty hypothetical question, but we asked what would need to happen in order for you to continue offering the services that you offer now if you were to have a reduction in your grant funding. So the most prevalent response, 27%, was that they would need to implement some sort of third-party billing. But as we saw before, remember that a lot of these organizations are not offering services that are going to be reimbursable if they're offering the supportive wraparound services. So that may not be a good solution for those organizations that are really focusing on, say, housing, for example. 21% said they'd have to reduce their services. Another 21% said they'd have to diversify their funding and seek funding sources in other places. 9% are unsure, and 4% said they'd make no changes. And we still have a number of people who think that they will just continue doing what they've always done. So a couple of the implications that we wanted to point out are that some of the things that I've mentioned before, like the availability of wraparound services and trying to help organizations think through how they're going to continue to make these services available. Another implication is really that these organizations need to be responsive and adaptive to shifts in the healthcare environment, that there's no one-size-fits-all solutions. We really saw a huge variety in terms of the readiness for ACA implementation and the level of sustainability and capacity that these organizations have. Anything else? Thank you.